70 years ago, the United Nations adopted the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Emerging from the horrors of World War II, the document made the protection of human rights a global priority. So, how relevant is it today? Michael Kirby is a former High Court judge. Michael Kirby, welcome to RN Drive.
Thank you for having me.
I know you're feeling very emotional. What's happened?
Well, emotional maybe overstates it, but I've just been handed by the National Library of Australia, a copy of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which is the exact pamphlet that I haven't seen for 70 years, or nearly 70 years, because it was given to us in my primary school in 1949, early 49, just a few weeks after it was adopted by the United Nations. And I remember at the time thinking, that is a very peculiar shaped document. And here it is. It's a small oblong-shaped document with Lake Success, New York on the bottom, the logo of the United Nations, and here it is, Eleanor Roosevelt's Universal Declaration of Human Rights that we were taught was so important for the future of humanity.
When you read it back then, when you were a child, what was the impression it left on you?
Well, we had a teacher who had fought in the war, and he was greatly affected by that experience and also by the nuclear weapons which had been used and terminated the war in the Pacific. And so he didn't just leave it to our imaginings and to looking at it for ourselves. He took great pains to teach us, you've got to learn this document, because unless we can comply with it in this world, we're just going to go on killing each other, and it's now very much more dangerous because of the nuclear weapons. So he had a real, I can remember quite clearly, he had a real personal commitment to the idea that humanity had to adopt and comply with universal human rights.
You're in Canberra today speaking at a conference marking the 70th anniversary of the adoption of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. What's your key message today?
The key message is that students of today need to be rekindled in a knowledge of and appreciation of the importance of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And we in Australia are now just about the only developed country that doesn't have a national charter of rights that can be used by teachers of today to students of today to tell them about the importance of basic human rights that we share together, and not only in Australia but around the world, that this is part of our humanity and it's part of building a safe world. Without human rights, you're just not going to have a safe world.
So you want to see that charter adopted? You want Australia to change the laws, essentially?
Well, I think it's about time. It is, after all, 70 years on, and it's even more since 1945 when the Charter of the United Nations was adopted, dedicating that organisation to universal human rights. It's not as if we're rushing things here. We've had a lot of time to consider it. We've got the model laws in the ACT and in Victoria. The world hasn't collapsed because we've adopted these principles in two parts of Australia. It's under consideration in Queensland. And my hope is that before I go to my eternal reward, I'll see it in the national sphere, in the federal parliament, to adopt a charter of rights and responsibilities.
In a time when we see violations in places like Yemen, in Myanmar, South Sudan, and that's just naming a few, of course, has the Universal Declaration improved people's lives?
It hasn't revolutionised them in the sense of solving all the problems, because we know what the principles are. But the fact that you've got those principles means that there is always a standard that you can go back to. Over the past week, I've been involved in three United Nations-sponsored meetings. One was in Bangkok on gay rights throughout Asia and the Pacific. Then another was in Geneva on AIDS and making sure we keep the antiretroviral drugs to people throughout the world. And then the third was in Vienna, and I came home from that yesterday, which was on drug control and making sure we didn't exceed the requirements of universal human rights. So in all of these areas, you have the basic standards and principles that are collected in the Universal Declaration, and that's what everybody does, everyone in the world. But in Australia, without Mr. Gorringe and without the little pamphlet that I was given, we've really got nothing to take us back to, and maybe that's why we sometimes stray from the principles of human rights and are criticised for it by the United Nations machinery in Geneva and New York.
Let's talk about one of those themes you talked about there and the gay rights conference you addressed. The Prime Minister pledged to quickly legislate to remove provisions that allow religious schools to expel gay students during the Wentworth by-election. But there has been essentially a stalemate over that legislation. Are you disappointed that we didn't see this happen before the Christmas break?
Well, I'm a bit disappointed. I'm in a constant state of disappointment at the way we've handled these issues. We often in Australia take a long time to muddle our way through to the right solution. But the idea that in this day and age students in schools could be actually expelled or removed or told they're not welcome because of their sexual orientation or gender identity is just medieval stuff, and it's time we got over it. And one of the problems in getting over it in Australia is we don't have a charter of rights that people can go back to and can say, well, this is just universal human rights. And unfortunately, we don't have that, so people go on with their own particular theories and their problems in their own mind. I think it's also not just a matter of students. It's a question of whether if schools receive federal money, whether they're public or private or religious schools, they should be allowed to dismiss staff if they're gay or if they're people of a different sexual orientation or gender identity. So I think there are some real questions that we've got to resolve and resolve finally in Australia. And I think most people in Australia would agree with what I've just said.
Yeah, but there is bipartisanship between the Coalition now and Labor on getting rid of the ability of religious schools to expel or essentially kick out a gay or LGBTQ student. But it's over, actually, the detail. It's always the detail now that there's a stoush. Labor claims the government's amendments to the Sex Discrimination Act would widen discrimination against LGBTI students, and they say they have legal advice to say that. They say there is nothing in their bill which threatens the status quo of religious schools being able to continue their teachings or uphold their religious ethos. I don't know how across you are the government's version of this, but would it widen discrimination? Does Labor have a case in making this point?
Well, I'm not here to give a legal opinion on the effect. Until now, we've relied upon the exemptions that religious institutions have claimed. Now the suggestions are made that positive rights should be inserted in the protection of religious freedom or religious liberty. But there is an old way of expressing that tension, and it says that the right to swing my arm finishes when I hit another person's chin. And the right to swing my arm of my religious beliefs really hurts when that then hits either students or hits staff or other people in publicly funded education. And I think the Parliament is going to have to sort all this out, but however it happens, my own view is if they take federal gold they've got to comply with a non-discrimination requirement. And I think it's entirely appropriate that the federal parliament should impose that obligation. If they want to go off on their own and have their religious prejudice and hobgoblins and so on, then that might be acceptable so long as they don't use federal money of taxpayers of Australia to fund institutions that act in that way.
The Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, asked Labor for a conscience vote. Labor says they don't want a conscience vote. What do you make of dealing with this issue via a conscience vote?
Well, a conscience vote is a late entrant into this field, because you'll remember that the Labor Party wanted a conscience vote on the marriage equality when that was debated a year and a bit ago, and the coalition didn't agree to that. So the embrace of a conscience vote is something that's rather new. That was the old way that we used to deal with this, but there's been water under the bridge now. We've had the survey, which was a most discriminatory act that LGBT people and their families and friends had to put up with. That established where the people of Australia stand on that by a very strong vote. And going back to another to a conscience vote over the very matter that was substantially dealt with of the equality of LGBTIQ people seems to be a retrograde step to me. I think it's time that people got on with it and finished this discrimination. And I'm sure if Mr. Gorringe, my teacher from 1949, who gave me the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, were here today, he would say that's exactly what the Universal Declaration of Human Rights was intended to stop: irrational discrimination by people against people, because that's what causes unrest and disharmony in our world, and with that disharmony comes violence and wrong actions.
On another issue which is very much human rights related, last night on National Rap, Liberal MP Tim Wilson told me that passing the Nauru evacuation bill, and for those who don't remember, that's a bill where people who are ill, who are on Nauru, both adults and children, would be evacuated after two doctors approved this, and of course the minister would have final tick off. He said it would create incentives for refugees to self-harm to get into Australia. It would create a pathway. What's your take on this issue? Because we seem to be at another impasse on how to deal with these asylum seekers who are languishing still in offshore detention.
I don't want to comment on Mr. Wilson or on his views or on the political stouch on this matter, but I have to say that the way in which we have been treating especially children, but also adults, and especially people with physical and mental illnesses on outsourced detention camps, has been the subject of seven reports by the United Nations Committee on Arbitrary Detention, all of them highly critical of Australia. It's not a pleasant thing to see Australia criticised so roundly by United Nations independent experts and told that it has to bring its law into line with its treaty obligations under the Refugees Convention. So I do think we're going to have to bring those into harmony, and at the moment our obligations under the Refugees Convention are not being met, and that's a sorry thing for Australia, because generally we're leaders in human rights in the United Nations, but on this matter we've got a lot to learn from the United Nations treaty bodies.
Just finally, I understand you've got a wedding coming up in February. Is that still on the agenda?
I hope so, as far as I know, unless my partner of 50 years has reached a different view in the last 10 hours. I think it's going to be on, and it's going to be on the very day on which we met, the 11th of February 1969, 50 years later. And that says something, doesn't it, about the slowness in which we in Australia have overcome our prejudice, irrational and unscientific prejudice against people because of their sexual orientation and gender identity. In the old days, gay people kept quiet, were told they should be ashamed and kept it all to themselves. That's over, and people are now going to stand up for scientific reality and truth. So as far as I'm aware, my marriage is still on, and I think we're going to see a lot of people taking advantage of the law, and it wasn't rushed. Neither the marriage was rushed, nor was the law reform rushed. Parliament is good at looking after the basic rights of majorities, but when it comes to small and sometimes unpopular majorities, and when it comes to irrational beliefs of the majority, it sometimes takes a long time to get round to doing the right thing.
That's Michael Kirby. He's a former High Court judge.